Maybe it looked like Kalumbrusha in Denmark and the northern parts of this and other industrial ecology parks in the world, where waste streams from one business become raw material inputs to another. We create closed loop systems for all of this, and nothing has to go to a landfill. Instead, we can try to use biomimicry and make sure that nothing goes to waste and instead can be upcycled, maybe recycled or downcycled if it has to be.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Our podcast hopes to bring forth and share sustainable business practices to business owners and introduce green businesses to the consumers. Where do all these initiatives begin? It begins with education, formal, informal, or self-taught. To that end, we have with us Professor Shroff, Murin Chair of Global Competitiveness and Professor of Supply Chain Management at the Palumbo Donohue School of Business Management at Duke University. Welcome, Professor Shroff.
Well, thank you so much, Vidya. I'm thrilled to be here. I love talking to people about all that is happening in the world of sustainability, sharing that with my students who've also listened to your podcast. And I'm really excited to be able to figure out how to help people to integrate more sustainability into any enterprise.
Yeah. So how long have you been a faculty member teaching?
Yeah. I started at Boston College and came to Duquesne in this MBA in sustainability program in 2007. So 13 years now here.
And you've been teaching sustainability the whole time, or is it something fairly new?
Yeah, it's something I've been teaching the whole time. I mean, I've been doing sustainability research since I was in high school, but I came to this program as an endowed chair to purposely launch and develop a new program around sustainability in a business school.
So you were way before everybody talking about sustainability. You were ahead of the game.
I was trying to be. I got my first environmental research grant as a high school student, and even a publication from that before knowing exactly what I was going to do going off to college. And then college just kept me that much more interested in the topic.
But now, so many people are talking about sustainability. The businesses, the governments, everywhere that you go, people talk about sustainability, about recycling. What has caused this heightened awareness and what has caused the shift?
Ooh, there's so many things, right? We could layer into that. But I think so much more awareness now in terms of the environment around us. And that environment doesn't have to be environmental, but our social, geopolitical environment. Politics right now are putting more pressure on what is and what is not sustainable. I just fielded a phone call this previous weekend from a township that wanted to talk about how they incorporate more sustainability into their 10-year plan for development of businesses, for actually infrastructure, for things like transportation, for homes. So I think there's so much going on that's hard to keep track of it all. But for what I see with the students that I work with and the companies that I work with, it's really about waste reduction, saving costs, and now being able to tell new stories about how their products and services align with the United Nations 17 Sustainable Development Goals.
Can sustainability be taught?
Yeah, it really can. Oh my gosh. I was fortunate enough to do a sabbatical and be in Sweden, and I got to work with Carl-Henrik Robert, the founder of the Natural Step program, and Jörn Broman, who heads up a program there at BTH University here in Karlskrona. And in how we approach this, we use a framework for strategic sustainable development. And that framework tells us that there are 8 sustainability goals, like the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, but sustainability priorities. And if we violate any of those priorities, then we know that something is not sustainable. And we can think about that in terms of the things that we take out of the earth. If we take them out of the earth faster than they can be replenished by the earth, that's not sustainable. Sustainability principle number 2 is if we put things into the environment faster than the environment can actually absorb them, that's not sustainable. Number 3 is if we, you know, clear cut forests and cut things down faster than they can be grown, that is not sustainable. So if we have violations of these 1 through 8 sustainability principles, the first 3 are focused on the environment. 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 actually look at human health, access to information, and the human, social, political elements of this. I don't really want to say political as much, but it's access to information, it's partaking in decision-making, and getting away from misinformation, especially, which is a big problem that I think we have these days in terms of the amount of bad information that's out there in the world.
You said you spent some time in Sweden. If you had to compare the mindset of the Swedes to the Americans in terms of sustainability, in terms of being mindful in everyday life as a consumer and as a business owner, how would you compare? What are the couple of really stark contrasts or commonality?
Yeah, well, in the Nordic countries especially, they have much better built homes. So when you go by their homes in the winter, you can see plants in the windows, and you can actually look at these buildings and not realize that their walls may be 20 inches thick. And yet we build homes in the United States that are built out of 2x4s that are 4 inches thick plus a couple inches on top of that. So their homes are more in a passive house format of building, that they're tighter envelopes, lower energy consumption. They have better infrastructure for mass transit and can get around anywhere basically without a car. A vehicle isn't the primary mode of transportation. So transportation is easier. Living in a building is better in terms of lower energy consumption. And even just systems set up to take everything back in terms of separating all of our food waste and our recyclables. So we have compostables and recyclables that we're able to separate into. I think we had 7 to 9 different bins when we were there. And here in the States, it's hard to get a good cost structure for even recycling just some of the main things that we recycle. But our recycling rate is so low in the United States versus other countries that we just don't have a good business case for some of that recycling, because we also don't take into account how low the tipping fees are for us to just throw something away. I'm part of the world right now with about 5 landfills within 25 miles of the city, and we have some of the lowest tipping fees of any state, and it makes it that much harder for recyclers to then generate revenue from something when they have to compete against low costs for dumping.
So what percent of U.S. waste is actually recycled?
Oh, I'm going to give this a really low number, and I'm probably going to be wrong, so someone can correct me, but I want to think we're only recycling like 4%. Okay. And if we go to videos and things like this called The Story of Stuff, that's been out for almost, I think, 9 years now, 99% of everything we make goes to a landfill within 9 months.
And you said you had 7 or 9 separate bins to recycle, right, in Sweden?
Yeah, for recycling and composting, so that could take in food waste, yeah.
I remember when we started recycling here in West Lafayette, Indiana, we had like 3 or 4 bins.